Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
This is Glenn the Geek from high on top of the Andes Mountains, whatever country they're in. Hopefully I'll be back in time for the show.
Did you parachute in?
Yes, I did. I'm here. I landed right in the studio chair.
That was awesome. I was like, oh no, my internet connection's down. I hear a lot of static. Wait, no, that's wind. Why do I hear wind? My internet connection is messed up right now, so that's why I'm sitting here on the telephone. Sorry about that, everybody. My husband is diligently working on it right now. Okay, start the show officially.
I am Glenn the Geek from Lexington, Kentucky.
And I am Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for July 14th, 2011, episode 184, sponsored by EasySignsOnline.com. Good morning, horse world.
Good morning!
It's Thursday.
Let's kick the tires and light the fires, Big Daddy.
Your presence is required on the command deck.
So Jamie was having some technical issues this morning and said, oh, why don't you do the first couple of minutes of the show? And I had that all prepared, and I said, no, you're going to be here.
Now I know why you made me wait. Now, so obviously, the reason for all of that is you must have listened to the show yesterday.
Yes, I did listen to the show. Apparently, I was quite busy. The one thing that was really uncomfortable yesterday was that ride in the UPS truck. They really don't have good suspension.
Well, you know, I could have said you were sick, or I could have had a little fun with it. So, yes, you were in the Andes Mountains. Yes, you were parachuting or skydiving. Yes, you were driving around a UPS truck. And, I had more.
It sounded fun, all those things I didn't get to do yesterday. It sounded like a blast, actually.
Well, how are you feeling today? Are you better, my friend?
I am feeling a little better today, so I'm here and glad to be back. Jennifer did a great job, though, so you guys did a good job without me yesterday. You don't need me here.
Well, that's awful sweet. It's true, but just kidding. I really missed you yesterday. It wasn't the same without you, for sure.
Okay, and we're getting a lot of actually clicking on your phone that you're calling in on now.
So
I don't know where that's coming from. But let's just go to Jennifer, and I got a couple of daily winnies I can do, and we'll see if you can get your side figured out there.
Okay, I'll call you back. Bye.
Okay.
Yeah, so when the technology completely falls apart and is crumbling as if it were an 8.9 earthquake, go to Jen.
That's right. Looks like you're going to be on duty, too, till she comes back.
You've been...
pinch-hitting a lot the last 2 days.
Well, on today's EasySignsOnline.com Thursday edition, we break from the gate with the first installment of Jamie's interview with Madeline Pickens, businesswoman extraordinaire, extreme Mustang advocate, and all-around interesting person. And then, continuing the advocate theme, we will be enjoying another chapter of Black Beauty by Anna Sewell, the original animal welfare advocate. Say that five times fast. And stay tuned today, folks, because it might be Thursday, but it's a free-for-all just the same.
All right, let's do my first daily winning.
And my first Daily Whinny goes out to you, Jennifer, my lovely wife, who filled in for me yesterday on a spur of the moment because I wasn't feeling so well. That's the first time in 7 months that I've actually missed the show. So thank you so much for filling in for me yesterday. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you're going to pay.
You did a great job. You even had compliments on Facebook.
I went to the tack shop yesterday, you noticed.
I did notice that. Yeah, she needed therapy after having to fill in for me yesterday.
I needed retail therapy after that.
We'll have to discuss how much money you spent later. My second Daily Whinny goes out to Ariat, who, out of the kindness of their hearts, donated 600 pairs of new riding breeches to the Rider's Closet at Pegasus Therapeutic Riding. That's Georgina Bloomberg's charitable program for riders in need. And they actually, pony clubs, therapeutic riding centers, and scholastic teams and things who don't have a lot of money can actually request the clothing out of the Rider's Closet. And Ariat was kind enough to donate 600 pairs of breeches. So good job, Ariat. I give you a round of applause for that. And I think we might have Jamie back.
I'm back. You know, when there's technical difficulties, I do what some people might do in life-threatening situations. I just panic. I completely shut down. I'm like, oh, my God.
You and Jennifer both.
I don't know what to do. My husband comes over. He goes, oh, you're not connected, blah, blah, blah. Let me just get it fixed. And 5 minutes later, everything's done. And he's like, why didn't you tell me like an hour ago? I'm like, I don't know. I'm busy.
All right, then no. I got another Daily Whinny. This is for your technology savior, your lovely husband, Chad. Thank you so much, Chad, for getting her back here, or Jennifer was going to shoot herself having to do the show 2 days in a row.
I just let him know that he just got the Daily Whinny, and he's currently super excited right now. Actually, he's leaving, and he just waved. But you got a Daily Whinny from Glenn, yay! Good times, yeah. Very exciting stuff.
All right, so I got to ask you something before we get too much further. Do I sound sexier today? Because I got a new microphone, and I want to see, do I sound better and sexier? Do I sound deeper? Do I sound like Morgan Freeman?
I was just thinking that. I was thinking, my God, he sounds like a mix between Morgan Freeman, Sean Connery, and Oprah Winfrey. I mean, and that's magical.
You should see the size of this microphone. I ordered it not knowing that it weighs about 10 pounds, and I have one of those arms that holds up a microphone like you see in studios. It wouldn't hold this microphone up. It kept sinking. Like,
no way.
Yes, this microphone weighs like 10 pounds. So I had to put it on a different stand on my desk, and even that it kept wanting to fall over because it's so heavy. So I had to weigh that down too.
See, that's why Larry King has his microphones hanging down from the ceiling. You can bolt those suckers up there.
I'm afraid the ceiling would fall down with this thing hooked to it. This is certainly not a mic you would want to hold, you know, like on a stage, because it's a heavy one. Anyway,
I was thinking that if Carrie Underwood was holding that on stage, it'd be like a workout. You know, she's only 90 pounds, so. Like,
that's
can you imagine
true.
Somebody walking around stage singing with, like, some giant microphone?
This thing is big. Well, we're going to see.
Hopefully
it makes me sound better, you know, I hope, anyway. I could try.
You sound great. You sound great.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. I got some news stories to talk about, but first let's go over schedule a little bit. You're
Yeah? Hold up. I did not get to do my Daily Whinny.
Oh, I didn't know you had one. Okay. See, we didn't get a pre-show today because we're too busy doing tech stuff. No planning today. Total improv.
this one goes out to Lisa, and she got one yesterday. But I have to follow up with her because she says that, you know, she's getting married and the wedding is still a year out. She's getting married in September of 2012. And she's like, girl, it has already started. Her parents want a big Catholic mass wedding. She wants a laid back outdoor wedding. She says, I will win that battle. Mom wants to be close by a golf course. I want flower gardens, nature, and a water scene. Eloping is sounding better and better each day. Yes. Do it. You know what? I told my dad, I said, Dad, all I want to do is get married on a beach. And he's like, okay. Well, they don't have churches, beaches and churches, honey. I'm like, I'm not gonna get married in a church. I want to get married, you know, on the beach. Well, I was thinking you could do it in my backyard. Dad? There's no beach in your backyard. Like, what are you not understanding about I want to get married on a beach barefoot? You know? So he had a really difficult time with that. But Lisa, you know, make a few important decisions that you do not want to waver on. And then, you know, just stick to those and then just be flexible on the rest. Just, you know, I didn't care about the flowers. I didn't care about this. I didn't care about that. Just make your special decisions and then let your family do the rest, and then they'll think they're involved. So there you go. That's my daily winning.
Okay, but that's all sage advice and sounds very good and very well thought out and mature. Lisa, I have a different opinion. Jamie and I will meet you in Vegas, run like hell. That's my opinion.
Not
we
run
will
from
be your witnesses. We can even, you know, we can put the I do's on the air. We can even make sure there's a horse there at one of those little cathedrals there on the strip. We can have a ball. You'll have much more fun than having to put up with this. By the way, I am Catholic. I've been to a lot of Catholic mass weddings, and boy, oh boy, they go long. Ooh.
Yeah, forever long ceremony. Nobody wants a ceremony, but everybody just wants to go to the party.
Get to the party, and then you know, you just went out for the honeymoon. So,
yeah, exactly. So spend your money on the honeymoon. No, girl, if the wedding's fun. Just make sure that it's what you want. If you don't want a Catholic mass wedding, rebel, young Catholic lady.
I can see the sister whacking her on the hand now. No,
I know,
you're
right?
not. You're doing the wedding. So tomorrow or later, actually after the show today, you're heading out.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, I just got butterflies in my tummy when you said that. Yes, this weekend is a big day, and we actually meant to have this weekend about 6 weeks ago, but that whole, you know, herp fest that happened, the herpes gate outbreak that had to shut everything, all the shows down around here. So, officially, this weekend is my horse Jet, my rescue thoroughbred's first three-day event. We have dressage tomorrow morning at 8:30. We have cross country on Saturday I'm riding at 2:30 our time, and Sunday is show jumping, and they haven't published those. So, yes, the second we get done with this show, I am loading my horse up and driving up to Flagstaff. Now, the reason I'm hustling is because there's potential. They're doing some classes where you can jump the show jumping fences ahead of time, because this is more of a training event. So they're letting you do a little pre-comp. You can buy a ticket and compete in your level. However, that's happening very early this morning, so I'm not sure if I'm going to make it or not, but by God, I'm going to try, because I would love to have jumped him over those show jumps already. My God, he's never seen, first of all, the horse has never been in a dressage ring, so this is going to be exciting. Second of all, the horse has never seen flowers or jumped anything colorful at all. The only thing he has done is actually schooled cross country, but that's it. Am I crazy, Glenn?
You're pretty crazy. Yep, pretty crazy. But you know what? This is how you learn. It sort of reminds me of this.
Green on green makes black and blue. Wouldn't ride that horse if I were you. It's like walking on a high, tight wire. Dynamite too close, too far.
Does that help the butterfly?
You just couldn't wait to play that, could you? But, you know, sports psychology-wise, and, I mean, I know Daniel Stewart will be proud of me because I've got my song that I'm going to sing for the entire ride. But sports psychology is the fact that you have to have appropriate expectations. This is what I'm telling myself anyway. So my expectations when I'm on my warm blood, he and I have been together for many, many years, 9 years. When I am on him and I compete him, And now he's, of course, semi-retired from some lameness stuff. But when I'm on him and I would compete him, I would have the expectation of winning. Like, I go there to win. I love to win. I want to win. Everybody wants to win the competition. And I would go there with the expectation of winning. And, you know, with him, I did incredibly well. I mean, he won probably, he probably competed 15 times and won 12 of them between his beginner, novice, and training stuff. So he did, he was very successful, but he didn't start out that way. And I have to tell myself that, because what's really frustrating is to go from a horse like that, who is just so awesome and fancy that I know, and we know each other so well, we just think something and we do it, to go to a horse that's green, all garnering my expectations, all I really want to do is finish. You know, I want to finish the entire horse trial. I want to have a non-embarrassing dressage ride to where he doesn't jump out of the arena or something. I would like to have a safe cross-country ride, and I would like to have, you know, a non-embarrassing show jumping ride. So if I could just stay on for all three phases.
That's where I was going with it. I was going with, you know, I think finishing is even a lofty goal. Maybe just survive. Live through the weekend. That's my goal for you. It's just to live through the weekend. Jumping out of the dressage arena is important. That kind of ruins the score a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, that cross-country thing, don't get lost on the cross-country course. That's another thing I wish for you.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And then, you know, if you get the show jumping, I'll be thrilled.
See, you're thinking as long as I just get to show jumping, then you'll be happy. Okay, just so you do know that I will have, for the very first time, I will be wearing my .2 air vest for cross country.
Oh, look at you, all fancy-like.
Yeah, I'm all fancy-like, and so I hopefully will not...
Did you get canisters, by the way?
Oh, my gosh, I had to buy them from Bit of Britain, and then the shipping is ridiculous because they can't fly. They have to go on the ground because they're these CO2 canisters. Anyway, it was very expensive, but I got a 3-pack. So
did you do your test like they tell you to?
No, I did not do a test because I figured that's about a $35 test. I didn't want to spend $35 on testing it. However, I would like to let you know that I will be wearing my new saddle. I am geared up. I've got my new saddle, my new Ariat boots. I've also got the .2 air vest and my Charles Owen vest. And so I, like, literally, I'm going to look like a knight. I should join that jousting event.
Yeah, you're ready.
Because I'm geared up. I think I have enough armor.
You know what?
On.
We hang a little armor on Jet, and you're good to go.
Just give me a lance. Just give me a lance. I'll go right at him.
Wendy,
so yes,
by the way, Wendy sent in her application to that show.
That's what you had said. And isn't she like my height, like 5'2"?
Yes, she is. She's a little tiny. But apparently she even has a suit of armor that she had gotten for something else. I'm not sure what. But she'd gotten a suit of armor, and she said, I have a suit of armor already. I'm ready to go. So she told me she'd
be hilarious.
I think she's going to make it just because she's a 5'2 lady with a suit of armor. I mean, who has armor?
That's right. Yeah, who has armor? That's a good question. Not too many people. Hey, I have a couple news stories here that I wanted to do this morning because, I was out yesterday. And yeah.
I said, please go
there?
Ahead. I'm trying to keep...
Oh, okay. Sorry about that.
I'm trying to keep Boomer from barking. For some reason, there's like a squirrel outside, and he's going crazy.
Well, you know, we were talking about suits of armor. You know how equestrian fashion has made it in the mainstream? Everybody's wearing the tall boots and, you know, what looks like riding breeches and all that stuff. You know how modern designers like to take things to the next extreme. You know, they like to take things that, you know, equestrian fashion looks good to a point. Well, then they decided that they would go to the harness makers and take it up a notch. So this week on the runway, it was time for the harness makers to start making outfits for the ladies.
No
way. Gaga. Yeah, and this sort of started with Lady Gaga, of course. And if you go to the bottom of your show notes, and Jennifer, I don't know if I, yeah, there's a link to that. You can link to that story, Jennifer, on Facebook. You're going to see a couple of pictures of what looks like modified harnesses that become ladies' tops and dresses made out of leather with harness parts. And, yeah, they don't look very comfortable.
That's hideous. That's not just, it doesn't look comfortable. It's hideous. And it's some S&M type outfit. I mean, it's kind of bizarre. Like the first picture, and if you post these on Facebook, everybody will know what we're talking about. But the first picture, it's like black and gold harness thing. I don't know. But it looks like it should be in that movie Pulp Fiction. That's what that guy wore. That was
That's
in
right.
the trunk.
That's right. You're right.
I won't say what it was.
It actually looks like what Madonna wore 20 years ago.
Well, the brown one's not nearly as bad because the oil, it's kind of got shoulder pads and, yeah, it's all hideous.
It's very odd, yeah. So you can buy these for, you know, a mere $400 or $500 on the designer's website. And it looks like harness parts are coming into fashion for more than just horses.
Well, it's about time. I mean, being a driver, you should totally support this.
I know. You know what? We used to sell a lot of whips for non-horse people, let me tell you, when we had our tack shop.
Ew!
A lot of whips. Now, I want you to look at the story right above that, and here's another one that Jennifer can post. The Nacogdoches, is that? Nacogdoches, Texas. Well, police arrested two men there Monday morning after uncovering approximately 860 pounds of marijuana in their horse trailer. According to the report, police pulled over a 2007 Chevy pickup pulling a horse trailer because of defective trailer lights. They asked if they could search.
Oh, my God.
Did you see these two? They asked if they could search the trailer and the truck, and they said, sure. Well, the police found the hidden compartment with 860 pounds of marijuana hidden in it. The thing I found interesting about this story, and this is why Jennifer has to post it, is you see these two driving a truck with a trailer, they ain't seen a horse in their entire lives. They don't even know what a horse looks like. So
Hector Garza and Daniel Bailey, yeah, they're not just going to pick up their girlfriend's horse at a horse show. No.
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 You look at them, and I would pull them over, too. Yeah, when you're pulling a horse trailer, you kind of got to look like you've owned a horse or at least seen one in your entire life and not look like two standard criminals, which is pretty much what they look like. So Hector and Daniel, you got busted. 800, that's probably felony territory there, 860 pounds. That's a lot.
That and the article also says that they found in Hector Garza's socks, he had stuffed his meth in there. So, yeah, that guy's going to jail. You're in trouble.
I have one more story I want to go over this morning, and I have to read this one because it's so well written, and you get to read every day. We normally don't read the stories word for word, but kind of have to with this one because it's just so well written. And here it is. The title is Wild Horses Panhandling Ways Wary Rangers at Assateague Island Seashore in Maryland. They scarf potato chips and whole bags of marshmallows late in the night, leaving behind trashed campsites and ruined tents. They break into strangers' coolers and make off with watermelons. They carelessly turn on water spigots and leave them running. Rangers are dealing with a problem that has all the hallmarks of a classic beach weekend bender. But the culprits aren't rowdy teens. They are Assateague Island's famous wild horses. Park officials say the very thing that makes the horses a national treasure and draws millions of visitors to this 48,000-acre seashore south of Ocean City each year is under threat, their wildness. The horses have been mooching food for years, but their brazenness has gotten worse in the past few years. Some of the Assateague's 113 horses have become particularly fond of junk food and interact with people who bring it to the park. The horses beg, they pester, they even run a hustle that wouldn't be out of place on a DC street corner. You think they're playing that little game with where they hide the thing under the... I didn't believe it until I saw it. Two horses put their youngest, cutest pony in front of a car, and then the older horses went around to the windows to panhandle for food.
Come on!
The fact
you stand
that
here and
horses,
look cute.
You stay right here. You get in front of that car. They're not going to hit you. It's okay. We'll feed you later. The fact that the horses have learned how to open coolers and turn on spigots draws chuckles from the visitors. But park officials warn too much contact with humans puts the horses and people at risk. So they're kind of upset that the horses' food substances now are marshmallows and potato chips. And they've really gone away from eating grass and hay. So, you know what? I agree. I like potato chips and marshmallows much better than grass and hay, too. I think they're just smart ponies.
Yeah, I think it's funny that they're complaining about the horses that they parade people in to see. You know?
I know.
And I don't think that, you know, first of all, a horse isn't putting a marble under a coconut and going, guess which one? Just follow it with your eyes. You know? Or roll the dice. Anybody got a dollar? This is not happening. So I think it's funny, though. I'm sure that it's much like bears in a campground. You wouldn't feed the bears. You put your food away. You hide your food. Now, I've never been to this island, so I can't say how things are set up. But, you know, obviously there should be a little bit more responsible management. But the part about the horses putting the youngest, cutest pony in front of the cars while the other two went to panhandle, this was clearly not written by a horse person.
And there is another part here where they actually hired a cop to go around and find people who are feeding the horses. They're really getting serious about this.
Yeah.
You know, if they were really serious, though, they would let the islands for the horses and not allow people to go in and see them at all. I mean, that, you're kind of right about that. I mean, they've encouraged visitors all these years. Did they expect the horses, who, by the way, become tamed animals after a time, wouldn't go up and beg for food? They beg for food from us. I mean, our horses beg for food.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't they? Yeah.
I swear that my horses, when I walk outside, they just see a big, giant carrot walking towards them. I'm convinced. And they're like, oh, the carrot wants to ride us today. Ha ha, that's funny. Give us a carrot. So, yeah, these horses, they see people, they're like, ooh, s'mores. Yum.
It made me want to go back and see if Oompa Loompas were orange.
That's not funny. Why would you do that? Why would you bring up Oompa Loompas on a day like this?
Trying to relax you because you're so upset and so uptight about going to this horse show. I'm just trying to bring out the fun today. Hey, this show today is sponsored by Easy Signs Online. Visit our friends at Easy Signs Online and browse their unique website to see their many custom sign options and styles. Their step-by-step sign ordering process allows you to choose your sign options and to see all the pricing up front. From vinyl banners, magnetic vehicle signs, stall nameplates, to farm entrance signs, they also have business, school, and church signs. They now offer a complete line, brand new, of indoor signs, great for use in offices, churches, schools, etc., with sizes from 6 inches by 6 inches up to 4 foot by 8 foot, and any size in between. They have your indoor sign needs covered. They ship to every state in the U.S. to take advantage of their current free shipping promotion. Check out the website for details. That's easysignsonline.com. All right, let's get to the interview that everybody has been waiting for. And I have to congratulate you and Helena. You did a terrific job with this interview. I was very proud of both of you.
Oh, my gosh. You know what? I got to tell you, Glenn, she was, and you'll hear it in the part one and part two of the interview, she's just such a lovely person, just lovely to listen to, lovely to talk to, just an absolute gem of a lady. And if you don't come away from this interview just being in love with Madeline Pickens, I don't know what's wrong with you, because I would love for her to be my best friend. So I want you guys all to hear it and enjoy it. You'll learn something. You may laugh, you may cry, whatever. It's good. Thank you.
All right. So this is Madeline Pickens' interview, a part of what series?
It's the Woman's Hope series, which is heartfelt, what's the O stand for? Overcoming obstacles. P is for passionate, and E is for encouraging. She's definitely all of those things. She is an amazing person with, you know, she inspires hope in everybody, including the animals. She overcomes obstacles. I mean, the woman has battled Congress. you know, and won. So she's passionate, she's empowering, she's encouraging, she's all the things that that definitely encompass a woman of hope. So here you go. Here is Madeline Pickens.
This is a two-part series. We'll play the first part today and the second part tomorrow. So here's part one of their interview.
Well, Madeline Pickens is the epitome of the successful businesswoman, but she's not just a businesswoman. She's an owner of thoroughbred racehorses. She's a breeder. She's an animal welfare activist, philanthropist, author, former model, entrepreneur, wife, and mother. She was introduced to horse racing in the 80s and was the owner of a horse that you might have heard of named Cigar. She has also owned Show Jumpers, has been victorious in prestigious races, including the Breeders' Cup, Santa Anita, even had a horse go in the Derby. She even still finds the time to ride. Now, to get to the meat of it, she has donated money and saved horses, working with Old Friends Equine, saving horses from Japan, flying them to the rescue, and following her marriage to Boone Pickens, the couple led the fight to close the last horse slaughterhouse in the United States. Their work resulted in the passage of the American Horse Slaughter Prevention Act by the House of Representatives. To add to it, during the disaster caused by Hurricane Katrina in August of 2005, they donated $7 million to our friends at the Red Cross to aid the people and the city of New Orleans. They flew on their own personal dime animals that needed help that were left behind and sent them to rescues all over the country. And after the BLM announced in 2008 that the government was considering euthanasia and or selling more of the 30,000 wild Mustangs to slaughterhouses overseas, Madeline Pickens said no. She announced plans to develop a 1 million acre sanctuary for the horses. And on September 13th, she was named, of 2008, she was named ABC News' Person of the Week. She's an animal lover. She's an amazing woman. And she makes her our pick to join the ranks of the Woman's Hope series. Heartfelt, overcoming, passionate, empowering. She certainly fits that to a T. So please welcome Miss Madeline Pickens. How would you describe yourself to our listeners?
Well, first of all, I immigrated to America, so I feel very fortunate to have been able to come here. I always dreamed of coming here, even as a child. So America is what I dreamed of. It's where I ended up. I had such expectations, and I've been very lucky. You know, I've achieved my goals here in America. But, you know, as you start to achieve goals, you start to find out about other things that are going on. And you start to think about maybe adding some other goals. And it was apparent to me that this country needs help as far as its kindness to animals. And so that has been my passion. And, you know, if it's something related to an animal, I'm always there.
Yes, you are. I believe that your dachshund is sitting in your lap right now, your rescue dog.
Little Tommy, I am. Made a mistake. I was surfing online one night, and my Jack Russell was, 17 and a half years old, and he's been more than a friend. I just cannot tell you how I loved that dog. And I was thinking, I'm never going to be able to do the right thing with him and put him down when it's time. So I thought, I'd better start to look for another companion. And also, you know, when you have an old dog and they start to get blind, I knew that whatever I adopted would become his eyes, and that's exactly what happened. So he became dependent on my dachshund, and it was very, very sweet, because until that time, my Jack Russell was a pretty aggressive dog, so it was sweet. He mellowed, and Tommy was his security blanket. So I was just, surfing online and doing all the Jack Russells, and at one point, I had standard poodles, and they were incredible dogs. They're so smart, and they don't shed. So I went through them, and then I said, you know, I'm just going to look at dachshunds, because I always thought they were cute. And I always go to places like Missouri or Tennessee, you know, Texas, Oklahoma, where they have really bad issues with animals, and they have all those puppy mills up there in Missouri. And so I went down to Tennessee, and I looked at these videos, and there he popped up.
So, it's a dangerous thing to go surfing on the internet, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know what? I slammed it off, and a week later, I peeked again, and there he was. He was still there, and I said, well, that's the message. So so I went ahead with all the documents. And they came and visited my home, and, you know, he came to me, and he's been a delight, an absolute delight. But they were cruel. He was from a puppy mill. He was starved to death. He was discarded in a dumpster. And now he really does have a happy home. So he's had a happy ending.
Well, I think he's probably about the luckiest pup in the world to be able to come and live with you. Now, what you're doing here that really inspired me, obviously, you know, you've saved a lot of horses. You work with Old Friends Equine, and you now have kind of directed your attention to something that I feel is very important and really didn't have a ton of experience with them until I moved out here to Arizona, and so many people own them, is the Mustang. And you know, you've now created Mustang Monument, which we'll get into, but why the Mustangs and what makes them so special to you?
The reason I got involved with the Mustangs was I used to see all these old great cowboy and Indian movies with my father when I was a little girl. And he loved them, and of course I fell in love with the Western life, and that was the beginning of why I wanted to come to America. When I got here, I didn't see any of the West. You know, you'd go to Disneyland, et cetera, et cetera. Oh, how cute!
Sorry about that. I told you that would happen.
And you know, so I forgot about it. And then with Katrina, when I did the airlift out of there, I couldn't believe it when somebody came up to me and said, you know, could you help me with horse slaughter? I didn't know what they were talking about, so I got into it. Then I started to see video of the wild horses being gathered and those ending up in slaughter, and I was sick to my stomach.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew then that was my calling and I must do it. And right now, you know, we have over 500 horses at Mustang Monument that have been rescued. They're the Paiute Nation horses that were headed to slaughter. And so we bought them off the killer buyers. And they are now safely, happily at Mustang Monument. But can you imagine why anybody would want to slaughter mares in foal with a foal by their side? I mean,
no.
What to eat on a foal? You know, so the whole thing is uncivilized and crazy. It's just crazy stuff. So anyway, they're there happily. Now, the other thing that I'm trying to get done, and we're trying to work this out right now, is at the Sheldon Refuge, is they have these other horses that they keep gathering, and they are not protected by the Bureau of Land Management. Tommy? Tommy? Fire!
You are officially part of the Horse Radio Network family.
Yep.
You know, it's so funny. We have this feeling that, you know, just because I say a civilized word, quiet. Wait, getting back to the horses. So I really do want to help out with that herd of horses, the Kaiga horses, because, you know, if you call it a sanctuary for wildlife and animals, for some reason they don't want to deal with the numbers. And so I'm trying to work something out. You know, I really could solve their problem for them, just take them all and do something with them. You know, they'd be safe with me, and again, the public will still be able to view them. So we're trying to work something out now. I'm probably a little bit ahead of the game talking about it, but you know, if you don't, then people don't know that you're trying to do the right thing, and it also helps them out, you know, fish and wildlife and game and all of that. They know now they have a friend that they can count on with these horses, other than people picking them up. And, God, I get such bad emails about this, where they think they're going or where they're ending up. So I'm concerned about it. And the easiest thing for me to do is just say, hey, we will find a way. So bring them over to me, and we'll take care of them.
And we'll figure it out later.
Yeah.
Now, what do you find to be the most challenging at this point? I mean, you've overcome some pretty big obstacles, especially with the United States Congress. What's the next big challenge for you that you say, okay, I'm going to roll up my sleeves, and here's where I really need to dig down deep into Madeline's heart and soul?
Oh, I'm not so sure that it's one thing. You know, I just will never end my journey trying to help save horses. I mean, you just think about that Leona Helmsley, when she died in her will, she left, what, $8 billion to animals. And apparently they got that changed. They said, well, she didn't mean to do that, and she encompassed something else. And from what I understand and heard was that the first year when they divvied up some money to give away, they gave away $41 million from her estate, and $40 million went to the New York City Hospital, and $1 million was split up between 10 different animal charities. That's what I heard. And to me, that's sad, because if she was alive, they would never dare do that. So, you know, there's always good intention, and there's always people that think, well, I don't think that's probably what she meant. We need to change that around a little bit. So, you know, for me, I try to do everything while I'm alive, because I don't think you can count on what happens to your estate after you're gone. And I've seen it happen with so many people that I'm pretty confident that that doesn't always go the way they planned. So I still have to work with the government and probably with the Congress. The difficulty with government is it's not necessarily me. I think if I was a bank, they'd bail us out really fast, you know. Yeah, when they had they came up with billions and trillions, and because we want to resolve the wild horse issue, that's monumental to them, and that cannot be resolved fast. I've been working on this issue for 3 years, and it's something that we could have done, you know, in a few months if they had wanted to. And then I say, well, even if they want to, they have to jump through hoops. When President Obama got involved in banking, they did it. Well, I sure wish he'd get involved with us with the wild horses and just let us take care of it. Let the private sector take care of it. You know, they're always talking about the private sector coming in and helping and taxing us and doing this and doing that. You know, we can do a lot more if you just help us and allow us to do the things that need to be taken care of as advocates. I mean, you know, they're doing a very expensive job right now in the program that they have the wild horses right now. And I'm not blaming the BLM. I'm just saying if that's the system and the system doesn't work and they want to change it. But can they? Well, it takes a year to do this and 3 years to do that, and maybe it'll take another 3 years for the RFP for the public lands. And, you know, if President Obama would just jump in and say, you know what, fix it. We don't have the money to give you anymore for that program. Let's just fix it. We can. We can. Yeah. We know how to do business. Anyway, yeah. I've got a lot of good friends at the BLM that I have a lot of respect for. So hopefully they will make the right decision. And there's lots of people that have been working on this issue for a long time. I certainly have already spent millions of dollars on this, and I don't want to waste any more. Whatever dollar I spend, I want to go directly to an animal that I'm saving.
Amen, sister. I totally appreciate that. I mean, when you talked about Mustang Monument, I mean, you said you're announcing it, but it is on your website. And what I loved about it is that you want to have 1 million acres, and the public can go, and they can be a part of the West and be a part of the Mustang life. And so kind of give everybody a little bit of a picture of what you have in mind for that. And then, just let us paint a picture for us, if you will.
Oh, great. Simply, I purchased 2 ranches. One had 14,500 deeded acres, and that was called the Spruce. And that has over 530,000 acres of public lands that I bought the allotments for. And then I purchased adjacent to that the Warm Creek Ranch so that I have access to the highway and power. And that had 4,500 acres of deeded land and another 20,000 public lands for which we bought the grazing rights to. And so together we're around 560,000 acres. What I've asked the government to consider is opening up the public lands from cattle grazing to horse grazing. This way, we can take a lot of horses, and because we're no longer running it as a cow-calf operation, we can do a lot more to take care of the horses. there were, when I took it over, there were a lot of wells and springs that really weren't working so well. Now we're motivated to do it. The people before with cows were not motivated to do it. I'm motivated. I want to create this eco sanctuary where you can all come with your families and your pets and visit. And we can have, I've already purchased like teepees that are 850 square feet where boys can come in and camp out overnight, and we'll have educators to tell them stories, not just learn about the earth, but also learn about the stars. If you're having a barbecue outside at night, look at the story around you that you have to tell, not only in the skies, but let's also talk about our tribal history that kids do not learn very much about in school. And I'm fascinated with our tribal history, and I know my daughter is. And I remember doing homework with her, and we did Lewis and Clark, and then and Sacagawea. And then we turned the page, and it was back to something else. You know, America did not begin when the pilgrims arrived. I mean, America existed before. There's a lot of denial about it. But, I mean, you know, it's a beautiful history, and we need to all be friends, and we need to make it work. And, you know, we want to teach the children how to grow food on the land, you know, photographic classes, art classes, so that, you know, a wellness center, so that when you come, you're active. You come with your family, but you leave and you've learned something together as a group. And you've left your footprint at the sanctuary. And, you know, we already have these 500 horses from the Paiute Nation, and they're so fabulous. I mean, you see them running with their foals by their side. And we have a creek that runs next to the house, and they all come. I mean, to suddenly see a herd of 200 horses come running in to drink water is beautiful. And then the next 200 come in, and we gelded all the stallions because this was a rescue. And we know there's tons more to rescue. So we do the right thing. When we go into rescue work, we spay and neuter. In this case, we didn't have to, neuter the mares. We took care of it by the stallions. We just gelded them all, boom, boom, boom. It was done, 120 of them.
Wow.
And now we're safe, you know. If there's anything in the oven, you know, right now, if the mares are in full, we'll see them, and we'll, if it's a stallion, it'll be, you know, neutered after a few months. But I feel so good about it when you go, we're right now not ready to accept the public because we don't have the accommodations. You know, we need to get our business license. We need to work out accommodations with the Elko County. And, you know, that all takes time. And the biggest part about this is our rescue. We have to do that first. And we've filled in our RFP with the government so that if they are willing to give us horses. After all, we pioneered the program with them when Henry Bison was there, and he announced he was ready to do it. So, but there was a change in the administration, and so then you have to go with a new group. They appear to be on board now, and, you know, otherwise they wouldn't have done an RFP. We could have done it without it, but they weren't willing to do that, and that's fine. It's just cost us all a lot more money in attorneys and engineers and everything else. You know, when you deal with government, it's not cheap. And it's not easy.
Well, you know, I find it amazing how you've been so successful with the government so far. But I'm going to tell you right now that if I could reach through this computer and give you a great big hug for what you're doing, I totally would. I thank you so much for saving these Mustangs and then, you know, being responsible with the castration of all the males and just making it kind of a happier situation. And I want to tell you that the day that you open up that Mustang Monument, we are going to be there because that is just what a great adventure and experience for people that never would have the opportunity to do that again. So not only are you saving them, to me, education breeds interest, and then interest breeds, you know, more and more people getting involved. So when you're bringing people there, you're educating them, you're getting them interested, and it's going to be a revolution. And I'm incredibly proud of what you do. But I want to know, what is your proudest moment?
And that ends part one of Madeline Pickens' interview, and you'll hear about her proudest moment tomorrow on the show. We'll have the second part of that interview. And, of course, that was Helena B. from the Stable Scoop Radio Show that joined you for that.
Yeah, it was great. You know what? What a cliffhanger. I can't remember what she said. So I'm like, what was her proudest moment? Oh, no, I want to hear it.
I had to find a good place. And the only reason we didn't play the whole thing in one show is it was about 40 minutes, and that's a little too long for one interview for the morning show. So that's why we're playing it in two parts.
Yeah. I think it's great, though, because then you can play it tomorrow and I can go get ready for my dressage test.
Yeah, you will be with us tomorrow. We forgot to finish that thought this morning. You'll be with us, but you'll be with us from the horse show, so it'll be a little bit different.
Yeah, it will be. And, you know, back to the Madeline Pickens thing and Helena helping me, it was just, I mean, you heard how passionate and exciting, how excited I was to talk to her, because she's somebody I've read about for ages, and Helena was just as excited as I was. So it was great to have two women be able to do the Women's Hope series, and hopefully she'll join me on a bunch more. We do have more lined up, but I can't wait for part two tomorrow.
Yep, part two will be here tomorrow. You are listening to Horses in the Morning, sponsored today by EasySignsOnline.com. I am Glenda Geek, and that is Jamie Jennings, and Coach Jen is over there in the producer chair. And we have our, it is the Chronicle Day, so Lisa from the Chronicle is going to be with us to talk about a bit of a controversy they have going on over there. But first, we have a song for you, and then today's Reading of Black Beauty. Now, I tuned in yesterday, and boy, carnage on Black Beauty, just.
Yeah, we definitely had to up the body count, but we still don't know whether he's dead or not, so. You know, it's part two today to find out whether or not the horrible person that broke Black Beauty's knees did, in fact, fall off and die. We'll find out in a minute.
And you know what? I am looking here for the song for today, and there it is. Okay, good. And I thought it maybe hadn't uploaded, but it's there, and this is for you, Jamie, because I know you're not nervous about your show at all tomorrow.
Oh,
and, you know, you're not nervous at all, so I thought I'd help you out. Here we go.
Green on green makes black and blue. Wouldn't ride that horse if I were you. It's like walking on a hot, tight wire. Dynamite too close, too far. Today you might get off scot-free, but chances are eventually he'll go up. You come down, that's when you'll understand this song. I can't tell you what to do, but green on green makes black and blue. Green on green makes black and blue. I wouldn't ride that horse if I were you. He is your first, and he's only two. Haven't you heard? Take my word. Green on green makes black and blue. It's like walking on a hot, tight wire. Dynamite too close, too far. Today you might get off scot-free, but chances are eventually you go up, you come down. That's when you understand this song. I can't tell you what to do, but green on green makes black and blue. Green makes black and blue. Ooh, ooh, ooh.
I'm feeling confident. I jumped my horse's show jumping yesterday, practicing. I decided the way I'm going to approach the show jumping portion. I've already ridden him cross country. Dressage will be a nightmare, but at least I was hoping I'd stay on. Now I'm like, oh my God, I'm an idiot for taking this green horse to a horse trial.
But you know what, though? That song isn't true for you, though. You're not green. Your horse is green. You're not green. You've been doing this forever. So the song really doesn't fit you, but it just was the closest I could get to make you nervous. So I'm pretty mean sometimes.
I do want to know, is it legal to duct tape your horse, duct tape yourself to your horse? Can you do that? Can you just, like, wrap the duct tape? You know, I got to tell you, the part that I am incredibly nervous about is I go to run cross country. And I think the warm-up is going to be the scariest place. When he's by himself on course, I think he'll be fine. But the warm-up is the place where everybody's galloping around like an idiot, you know, jumping three fences, and there's 20 people out there fighting their way to get over the fences. That part I'm a little nervous about. The course will be great. But here's what I'm most nervous about, Glenn, is when I come across that finish line, usually what you do is you just immediately hop off your horse. I'm going to be wearing a .2 air vest.
I was going to say, that's why you don't want to duct yourself. You don't want to duct tape yourself to the saddle either if you're wearing the .2 vest, because then it won't work.
However, what I'm most afraid of, Glenn, is that I'm going to forget to disconnect it. It apparently has happened to every rider. The first time they wear their .2 air vest is they just hop off without unhooking it, and it goes off and blows up. And I really think that would scare the bejesus out of my horse if I just hopped off next to him and the air bag popped and went off, and I look like the Michelin man. So I'm a little nervous about that.
Is Chad going along on this vacation, the adventure?
Chad will be coming up Friday night, so he'll miss my dressage test, which he is not unhappy about because, you know, how much horse husbands love dressage. So I will have a full crew. Rebecca, one of my students, is coming. My friend Teresa and her husband are coming, and they're all coming up Saturday morning.
Will anybody be at the finish line with a video camera of cross country? That's all I care about.
Oh, God, please, please. You know what? I'm just going to ride him back to the barn. Hopefully I'll figure it out by the time I get back to the barn. Oh, Lord. Thank you very much.
Let's go to our guest today. We have our weekly Chronicle report, and Lisa joins us almost every week when she's not flying around the world with the Chronicle report. And that's, of course, from the Chronicle of the Horse. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning, Glenn. How are you today?
Good. So Jamie's getting ready to take her baby out on his first horse trial.
Oh, that's so exciting.
Yeah.
I'm taking my baby to her second horse trials on Saturday, so it'll be equally exciting.
Which ones are you going to?
Yeah.
We're going to the Maryland horse trials, which is just about maybe an hour from us here in Middleburg.
Nice. So it's a one-day horse trial?
Yep, it's a one-day. And I got my times. I have these crazy times. I go at 4 and 6 and 6:30.
What?
Yeah. Seems really late, but I guess it won't be as hot, at least.
Yeah, I guess not. The 6 and 6:30, is that from cross-country straight to show jumping?
You go from show jumping straight to cross-country. You usually just show jump in your vest and everything and then just go straight on.
Gotcha. I guess they have to do that. Yeah, this one is one of the actual 3 days, because they're going to be doing the training level 3 day, which is my, I guess in eventing, it's my ultimate goal is to do a training level 3 day event. Yeah, I don't need to go advanced. I don't have the desire to be crazy. I want to do it, so I'm going to definitely keep a close eye on what's going on and try to go to some of the seminars that they're going to have about it. So this is the Coconino horse trials, and they really try to educate the younger riders and the people that are doing their first official 3 day. It's a half star is what they call it. So it'll be exciting, but know that so best of luck to you. I can't wait to hear how it goes.
Hopefully it will go well. Not too many crazy stories.
Oh yes. Hopefully neither one of us have crazy stories. That'd be nice. So there's a little bit of drama going on in the world of the Chronicle of the Horse.
Yeah,
is that
dressage drama. It's the most exciting kind.
I have to tell you that I read that article before, you know, you guys told us about it, and I'll let you tell everybody about it. And I definitely saw her quotes, and I was like, really? That's what she said to the Wall Street Journal?
All right. So, guys, I haven't seen this at all, so tell me from the beginning.
Okay.
What's the scoop?
So I think it was maybe it's been a week ago now. It definitely made the rounds a little bit ago. But there's an article that actually ran in the Wall Street Journal, and it's about Totalus, which is, you know, crazy. Things like that never make it into mainstream media unless it's the Kentucky Derby or something. So they ran this article about Totalus, about him, you know, being sold and being basically the most famous dressage horse who's ever lived, which is maybe not the tallest order, but in any case, so it compares him to, you know, LeBron James, and it's maybe not the best written article. I don't know if anyone else out there has read it, but it sort of sounds like it's coming from a person who maybe doesn't know a ton about horses, which that's really common, I think, anytime you see an article or a movie or something about horses, and, you know, we know a lot about them, and almost no one else is expected to know that many things about horses. So, you know, that happens. It sounds a little strange in places. But the weirdest thing is that they quote Catherine Haddad, who is a U.S. rider who lives in Germany right now. And she happens to blog for us. And so they have these quotes from her in this article, and they're silly quotes. And then the first one is, "I remember well the first time I saw Totalus live. I called a friend of mine and said, 'I've seen God.'" And then they refer to her as a dressage critic, which have you ever heard that term before? I was sort of like, I don't even know what that is.
Horse husbands are dressage critics, but no, I've never quite heard it that way before.
Yeah.
So,
to say that she's a dressage critic, I'm like, isn't she a writer? I mean,
yeah.
She's not like I think of a critic standing there after a movie smoking a cigar going, I don't know, I didn't really like it.
Yeah, so it's a weird thing to call her and just a weird thing to say in general because I'm not even sure that job title exists. And it mentions the Chronicle of the Horse in it. It says, said critic Catherine Haddad of American Equine Magazine, Chronicle of the Horse. So, you know, I thought that was strange, but whatever. So we get a blog from Catherine because she does blog for us, and I guess she was pretty upset about it. You can find this blog if you go to www.chronoforce.com/blogs, and it should be like the second or third one down right now. And I guess, you know, this girl, her name's Mary Lane, and she is an intern at the Wall Street Journal. She called Catherine and said that she had received her phone number and contact information from us at the Chronicle and that she wanted to interview her for the article. And this is all sort of strange in retrospect because no one here remembers receiving a call from someone at the Wall Street Journal asking for Catherine's contact info, which is something that probably we would remember. So she interviewed Catherine. She got some background on her and then ran this article saying she was a dressage critic. And Catherine's not very happy about that. If you read the blog, she's a little bit, and I think rightfully so, pretty snarky about it. And she emailed this Mary Lane of the Wall Street Journal and said, you know, I'm really unhappy about this. I'm not really a dressage critic. I'm an upper-level dressage rider. And she got a response basically saying, we listed you as a critic because when we contacted Chronicle of the Horse, they referred to you as a critic for them. Your regular
Ooh.
Column on their website is also one that gives critiques and advice, and you're listed there, the there is spelled incorrectly, T-H-E-I-R, as a blogger for them. I also referenced your position for the Chronicle of the Horse when I first contacted you. So Catherine's sort of asking in her blog, how does she respond to this? She says, this girl wants to be a journalist, but at the age of 23, I have to guess that since she graduated from college last year, she can't even own up to incomplete and accurate research. So what do you guys think about this? Should she be so upset? Is this something that's worth?
Well, you know, the only thing I know about Catherine Haddad is she has co-hosted and been on the Dressage Radio show here on the Horse Radio Network several times. And she is opinionated, and she is very proud. And she is, you know, to be called a critic, when you're actually a competitor in there, you know, with everybody else, would be kind of insulting because that's telling all your other riders that you're critical of what they do. Right. You're critical of your own sport, which you're a competitor in. That would, you know, that doesn't make any sense at all. And I can see why that upset her. And, of course, you know, mainstream press is known for getting things wrong. However, you were being very politically correct about this article. I will quote my wife, who said it was crap a seventh grader could have written. So, you know, that's the non-politically correct way of saying the article really was badly written, too. It wasn't just
it's pretty bad.
Bad. Yeah.
It's yesterday, if anybody heard our show yesterday, remember I was telling everybody about I actually talked about the Wall Street Journal article because she said in the article that somebody offers to buy the, you know, when they do the bit checks, there's a latex glove used and they flip the finger into the horse's mouth and do a bit check. But she didn't mention that. All she said was somebody tried to buy the latex glove with Totilus's spit on it, And so I was laughing about that because that seems a little ridiculous, but you know, I wouldn't put it past a huge fan to do something like that. But the fact that she talked about that in the article and was talking about how much T-shirts were selling for, it was it was not the greatest article, but it just unfortunately made Catherine, you know, the quotes that they used were
they're terrible.
When I saw him, I saw God. You know, and the fact that they actually in the article compare Totilus to a Lipizzaner, which
is absurd. Yeah.
If anybody knows horses, Totilus, the big giant black warm blood, and a Lipizzaner, a more compact, small white, small gray horse. So it was definitely funny, but it was just kind of the way that they used her quotes were not flattering for her, and she's probably mostly mad about that. But you know what? I have never been quoted correctly ever. It's a lost art form. I'm telling
you. It's true. It's really tough.
It should be the easiest part.
I love the best part of this article she wrote is her training tip of the day at the end. Teach your horse to spit in the glove if you want to earn over 90% in the Grand Prix freestyle.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, listen, we've set the record straight. Catherine is she is a dressage competitor. She's a Grand Prix rider, I believe.
She's a rider, not a critic. I don't even know exactly what that is.
Exactly. So we've set the record straight, so hopefully she's going to be a little bit happier. We will not judge you on your quotes that they used because, my God, this is another quote that they used. It's like taking an oil painting from Matisse and writing Monet's name on it, said Miss Haddad, the dressage critic. Edward Gow created a masterpiece. Now somebody else will put his name on it. And, you know, in context, that's actually a great comparison.
Yeah,
however,
I think it is, yeah.
Yeah, with the whole dressage critic line and all this, I'm like, wow, okay,
yeah,
I can see where
she's like really a loop. She sounds like a really loopy person, which she's not. She's a very like practical, you know, well spoken person, and
she's
comes across
she's
as
actually,
like
she's actually very articulate. And the one thing that you cannot accuse Catherine Haddad of being is not thoughtful. She is very thoughtful about everything she says. You can hear that. When she's on the dressage radio show, she really thinks through things. Probably too much. She's been accused of not having much fun because she's always, you know, just overthinking everything. But so that's what makes this totally bizarre. And and now that you've posted this and we've just made the comments we did, we'll both get sued by the Wall Street Journal, and we'll see you in court.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, nice. Fortunately, there's not that much they can take from me, so they won't get much out of it.
That's true. Same here. Same here. Well, that's interesting. The Chronicle in the middle of a maelstrom here.
Yep, it's been pretty exciting, so we'll keep you guys posted on what happens next.
And I used the word maelstrom intentionally because that's an old word they used back in medieval times. And I noticed that your headline article on the Chronicle right now is Knights of the Round Table and Main Street, Jousting Then and Now.
Yep.
So you write an article on jousting. Was that in response to the casting call for the jousting
show?
You know,
I don't know. This article was written by Abby, who is our newest staff writer, and perhaps that's where she got her inspiration. I'll have to ask her about that.
Well, and you know, Maryland, you guys are close to Maryland, and Maryland has one of the biggest jousting associations in the country.
Yep, which I actually didn't know before this article, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah, they have a lot of jousters there in Maryland that dress up in all the outfits and go around beating each other. So
sounds
yeah.
like a fun afternoon.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you, Lisa. That's
right,
the Chronicle
so
of the Horse. You can be found at chronofhorse.com. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right, thanks.
Bye-bye. Boy, this jousting thing keeps coming up everywhere.
I think we're going to have to try it.
You know, did you see that there was a post challenging me to that by a certain person on our Horses in the Morning Facebook page?
I did. Robert Dunn challenged you to be a part of the reality show that they are launching. However, you did say immediately after he posted that you would die. So I think that closed
the
door.
He said he'll do it if I do it, and I wrote there that we would both die. So,
yeah.
Because you know what? We'd have to be competing against Wendy, Dr. Ying, and she'd kick our butts.
Yeah.
She's a tough little girl. Yeah. That'd be embarrassing. Yep. So, no, I'm not going to sign up. Not today. All right. Are you ready for today's meeting?
Yeah. I'm ready.
Oh, do it.
This is a dramatic reading by Jamie Jennings of the English classic Black Beauty by Anna Sewell.
Chapter 26, How It Ended. It must have been nearly midnight when I heard at a great distance the sound of a horse's feet. Sometimes the sound died away and then it grew clearer again and nearer. The road to Earl's Shawl led through plantations that belonged to the Earl, and the sound came in that direction, and I hoped it might be someone coming in search of us. As the sound came nearer and nearer, I was almost sure I could distinguish Ginger's step a little nearer still, and I could tell she was in the dog cart. I neighed loudly and was overjoyed to hear an answering neigh from Ginger and Min's voices. They came slowly over the stones and stopped at the dark figure that lay upon the ground. One of the men jumped out and stooped down over it. "It is Reuben," he said, "and he does not stir." The other man followed and bent over him. "He's dead," he said. "Feel how cold his hands are." They raised him up and there was no life and his hair was soaked with blood. They laid him down again, came and looked at me, and soon saw my cut-up knees. "Why, the horse has been down and thrown him. Who would have thought the black horse would have done that? Nobody thought he could fall. Reuben must have been lying here for hours. Odds, too, that the horse has not moved from this place." Robert then attempted to lead me forward. I made a step, but almost fell again. "Hello, he's in a bad foot as well as his knees. Look here, his hoof is all cut to pieces and might as well have come down, poor fellow. I'll tell you what, Ned, I'm afraid it hasn't been all right with Reuben. Just think of him riding a horse over these stones without a shoe. Why, if he had been in his right senses, he would have just soon tried to ride him over the moon. I'm afraid it has been the old thing again. Poor Susan. She looked awfully pale when she came into my house to ask if he had not come home. She made believe she was not a bit anxious, and we talked a lot of things that might have kept him. But for all that, she begged me to go and meet him. But what must we do? There's the horse to get home as well as the body, and that'll be no easy matter." Then followed a conversation between them till it was agreed that Robert, as the groom, should lead me and that Ned must take the body. It was a hard job to get it into the dog cart, for there was no one to hold Ginger. But she knew as well as I did what was going on, and she stood as still as a stone. I noticed that, because if she had a fault, it was that she was impatient in standing. Ned started off very slowly with his sad load, and Robert came to look at my foot again. Then he took his handkerchief and bound it closely round, and then he led me home. I shall never forget that night walk. It was more than 3 miles. Robert led me on very slowly, and I limped and hobbled on as well as I could with great pain. I am sure he was sorry for me, for he often patted and encouraged me, talking to me in a pleasant voice. At last I reached my own box, had some corn, and after Robert had wrapped up my knees in wet cloth, he tied my foot up in a bran poultice to draw out the heat and cleanse it before the horse doctor saw it in the morning, and I managed to get myself down on the straw and slept in spite of the pain. The next day, the farrier had examined my wounds, and he said he hoped the joint was not injured, and if so, I should not be spoiled for work, but I shall never lose the blemish. I believe they did the best to make a good cure, but it was a long and painful one. Proud flesh, as they called it. It came up in my knees and was burnt out with caustic, and when it was at last healed, They put a blistering fluid over the front of both knees to bring all the hair off. They had some reason for this, and I suppose it was all right. As Smith's death had been so sudden, no one was there to see it. There was an inquest held. The landlord and ostler at the White Lion, with several other people, gave evidence that he was intoxicated when he started from the inn. The keeper of the toll gate said he rode at a hard gallop through the gate, and my shoe was picked up amongst the stones, so that the case was quite plain to them, and I was cleared of all blame. Everyone pitied Susan. She was nearly out of her mind. She kept saying over and over again, "Oh, he was so good, so good. It was all that cursed drink. Why will they sell that cursed drink? Oh, Reuben, Reuben." She went on till after he was buried, and then she had no home or relations, and she, with her six little children, was obliged once more to leave the pleasant home by the tall oak trees and go into that great, gloomy Union house. And tomorrow, Chapter 27, Ruined and Going Downhill.
Phew, so much drama on the show today.
It gets worse before it gets better.
First the wild horses, then we got dressage wars and, you know, journalist wars, and then we have death and destruction and mayhem. It's been a Thursday.
It's just been a dramatic kind of day, and I'm hoping to purge myself of all mayhem and destruction before I put my horse in the trailer and drive him 3 hours.
I think you've got it out of your system now. You know,
yeah, I feel a lot better.
The sun's coming up in Arizona, and the day's going to be wonderful. Your horse is going to walk right on the trailer. He's going to stand there and eat his hay quietly as you have a sedate drive up through the desert to the high country.
You know, I have to pose a question to our listeners, and maybe this can be our question of the day on Facebook, because, you know, I fancy myself, a decent horse person, and I can load a horse in a trailer. I can even teach troubled horses how to load. So my horse, my dear sweet thoroughbred, when I first got him, the first time I went to load him on a trailer, Glenn, I walked him right up to the trailer, and just to see what would happen, I threw the rope over his neck, and I have a two-horse straight load. I threw the rope over his neck, and he jumped right in. And I was like, oh, my God, this former track horse loves the trailer. He was really good. He jumped right in, stood still. I put the bumper up, closed the door, and we drove away. Now, that was about 3 months ago, and we go somewhere every week. We've been going to riding lessons. We've been going out to a neighbor's covered arena. I've been trying to take him as many places as I can to prepare for this weekend. Now, slowly but surely, as he's been going to load, he has slowly decided that it is not that fun. Like, it is not that great of an idea. And certainly at this point, Glenn, I am unable to throw the rope over his neck and have him just jump right in the trailer. So I'm wondering, does he hate it? Does he hate me? Has he just tired of it? Why has he all of a sudden decided that he's not going to jump right in the trailer? I mean, granted, he's usually in it for quite a while because my lessons are an hour plus away. But, you know, I try to be a safe driver, and I try to be very conscientious of my horse in the trailer, and he's just not as excited to load. And last time I went to leave, it took me about 10 to 15 minutes to get him in. And it ends up with me just, you know, shaking grain and saying, "Come on, baby. Come on, I got the food. Come on, pony. Get in the trailer, please." Because it's only me by myself. And I don't want to, you know, I can't, like, stand there with a whip behind him because I'm doing it by myself. Jen, do you have any ideas, any experience with this? Any of our listeners? 347-637-3238. Please, somebody help me.
Well, put yourself in Jet's shoes. You know the answer. Every time I get in the horse trailer, I have to stand there for a long time, and when I get where I'm going, I have to work my ass off.
Yes.
Yeah, that would
that would
make me want to do it, too, unless I was fed handily.
That's the only way you could buy you. So, yeah, that was my – I mean, and that's thinking in Black Beauty terms. Like, what would Black Beauty think? Well, he would think that, really, I get in the trailer and it's never really that awesome because then I have to go somewhere and then I have to work really hard and then she puts me back in and she brings me home. So, really, I don't want to leave home. Let's just cut the shortcut here and, you know, go straight home.
That's easy.
I'll just not get in. And Jennifer, I do appreciate that you are thinking now in Black Beauty terms, being that you had never read the book, and you're now personifying your horse and my horse, just like in the book. So I'm first of all.
Oh, is that what happened there? Is that how I figured that out, Black Beauty?
Yes. You noticed your experience with Black Beauty and the way that he talks to us, and you just talked to me like Black Beauty would. But I want to fix it. I don't want him to do that. I don't want him to get worse and worse.
Every other time you take him in the horse trailer, you drive around the block, and you bring him home.
So it's just a nice short ride.
It's like, getting in the horse trailer sometimes, it's really cool. I go around the block, I get the most special treat in the whole wide world, and I get back off, and I go back to my paddock.
That's exhausting.
Yes, it is. That's why people don't do it.
I have another option. I do have an alternative. And that is, you can dress up like the big carrot that Jennifer posted on Facebook and just stand at the front of the trailer.
There's an option. Buy yourself a carrot suit.
I don't even have to dress up. He already sees me like that. So basically what you're saying is I just need to walk in the trailer and stand there, and then he'll just jump right in.
Yeah.
That's right. Yep.
Okay.
Just make sure you look like a great big carrot that day.
Yeah. That works.
Okay, well, that's really solved my training problem. Thank you very much. Actually, if we could just go ahead and write this down, producer, book a trailer loading expert, a trainer. I don't know. We'll get Clinton Anderson on here or something and talk to him about it and see what he thinks. Why is my horse getting worse? Maybe he hasn't read
that. I look at that and say 10 minutes. Wow, that was short. That was that's like quickly loading for some of the horses we've had to load over the years. So,
well,
you know, there's a lot of people out there going, 10 minutes? That's all?
Yeah, but when you go from throw the rope over his neck and he jumps in and stands there, to you go to, like, you know, a frustrating 10 minutes. And mind you, this horse is 16-2, and when he decides he's not going to go, he just, I'm just going to back up. And you know what? I can't stop him. I'm like, okay, if you want to back up, I'm just going to make you back up. But there's only so far I can go because there's a tree back there, you know, and whatever. So, I can't get him to go forward. So, you know, I'll let you know how the loading goes today. And when we're on our way home, the other day I loaded my other horse first, and then he jumped right back in. So maybe it's I'm lonely and I don't want to do this kind of thing. Who knows?
Well, I bet you can find yourself a trailer loading clinic within 1,200 miles that you can sign up for and spend the day teaching your horse how to load in an instant.
Well, see, but I've already done those.
And after driving 1,200 miles to get to the clinic, he ain't going to load ever again.
And never, ever again.
I have a solution. I have another solution. Now, in addition to dressing up in the carrot suit and sitting in the front of the trailer, you have that big puppy Boomer now. Boomer should be helping. You heard that horse in the trailer. Put that dog to work.
That would work. Yeah.
Trust me. They try to be incredibly helpful. However, their manner of helping is to bite his back fetlock. So I am not quite allowed. But Aubrey Miller just posted on our Facebook page, and this is actually a great idea. She says, Jamie, just a thought. You might want to have somebody drive around or drive you around in the trailer for a bit to make sure it's not doing some funky rattling or something that's starting to make him reluctant. That's actually a great idea, Aubrey. If you could come on over. I'll put you in the back of the trailer and drive you around. But no, that's actually a great idea, and I'll definitely do that, but not today because I got to go.
That's right. You have to go. And speaking of which, you do have to go. So let's wrap up for today. We'll be back again tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. here on Horses in the Morning. Jamie will be here, but on the phone from the show. So we're going to get a live report from the what is it?
Coconino.
And where exactly is that?
It's up in Flagstaff, and they did say to bring your rain gear, because apparently it's supposed to rain. The other thing I'm going to try to do is this woman that I've been taking lessons with forever, her name is Barb Crabo. I am going to attempt, she's probably going to say no, but I'm going to attempt to get her on the phone so you guys can ask her about her expectations for my competition.
Hey, you know, Shelley just posted, too. This is a late-breaking update. She says, Jamie, my horse used to be the same way. It would take at least 15 minutes to get her on her every time, and I finally decided we aren't doing this anymore! I worked with her for 2 days, and now she hops right in. She even loads for my mom, and my mom doesn't really do horses. So, Shelby, we're going to have to get you on the phone to find out what exactly she did for 2 days to fix that problem. We'll have to figure that out. Maybe next week we'll get Shelby and Smith. By the way, Shelby, welcome to the show. I don't remember her posting before. Maybe I just forgotten, but welcome to the show.
I would like to say to Shelby, I live just west of Phoenix, Arizona. Come on over. I'll pay you for 2 days to stand out there in 115 degrees and try to teach my horse to load, and I would really appreciate it. That'd be great. Shelby, come on over, girlfriend. I love it.
All right, everybody. We'll be back again tomorrow. We forgot to mention earlier in the show that we will not be doing really bad ads tomorrow because Jamie's on the road, and we'll actually only have an hour show tomorrow. But they will be back again next week, so if you have some really bad ads, send them in to Jennifer at JenniferReallyBadAds.com. Jennifer at HorseRadioNetwork.com and put really bad ads in the subject line, and we will definitely get those on next week. Make them funny, make them stupid. These are supposed to be really bad ads, misspellings, you know, poorly written, just really dumb ads. That's what we're looking for. And you can submit those for next week. So, Jamie, one other thing I wanted to mention is that we recorded the second driving radio show yesterday with Wendy, my co-host. And I got to tell you, it was something cool. We're going to play a little excerpt of it next week because we had David Saunders on. Do you remember? He was one of the most popular guests we had on our show here at Horses in the Morning. He was the coachman for the Queen for 20 years. And remember when he was on, and people can go back and look up David Saunders on our website at horsesinthemorning.com and listen to that interview. It was one of the best ones we had. And, you know, when you worked for the Queen for 20 years, you have stories to tell. Well, he was on with us for 40 minutes and told all kinds of stories and where he's at now and what fun he's having. But he said right in that interview that he had been invited to Prince Philip's, the Queen's husband, His Majesty Prince Philip, his 90th birthday party. Well, he went to the birthday party, and he tells us all about it. And we're going to play that excerpt on our show next week, so you get to hear all about the Queen's husband's birthday party and what they're like.
Excellent. So all right. I got to go.
All right, everybody.
I love you.
See you later. Have fun. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a great trip and be safe.
All right, thanks. Bye.
All right, bye.